Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Comlock Center, and they can be found on the web at comlock.com. That's K-A-M-L-A-K.com. Our guest tonight is Dr. Stanley Krippner, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. So, Bob, what shall we chat about tonight?
Well, I do see that the excitement apparently is building on social media for the Afterlife Luncheon, which is a second annual luncheon of its type. Last year was...
It was a total sellout.
Crowd.
Last year, big crowd. And I think this week everybody's scampering to get their seats because the early bird special seats end on Saturday. And it's a fabulous, fabulous five-hour event. We open the doors at 11:30. We start at 12. We go all the way through till 5 o'clock.
This is taking place, in Long Island, New York. So
but it's at a hotel,
yeah.
And people are traveling to this hotel in Huntington. It's a Huntington Hilton from all over the United States just to come to this. And that's exactly what we experienced back in October when we did the last one.
And this will feature, Lloyd Auerbach, who our audience is probably familiar with. He's a world-renowned as a parapsychologist, and his expertise is in paranormal investigations, and he's an expert in ghosts and hauntings and poltergeists, and he'll give a fascinating talk on with a lot of specific case studies on this kind of phenomena. And he's going to be followed by Kim Russo, who our audience, I'm sure, is familiar with. She's on TV in the Haunting Of series, and she's a certified medium of Forever Family Foundation and an extremely evidential mental medium. So it's a well-rounded event and with great food to boot.
Oh, the food is fabulous. I know I picked out the menu myself. But I just want to add about Kim, because I know a lot of people go to group readings, and sometimes the medium will drone on and on and on until they eventually get to the readings, and then they don't only do a few readings. And if anybody has been to any of our events with Kim, they know that she is fast and furious with getting to as many people as she can. And because of the length of this event, even though there are a lot of people there and it is our annual fundraiser, it's not only a great place to be because there are going to be a lot of readings, but those readings are going to be very evidential. I think just watching a medium of Kim's caliber deliver to a group that large is amazing in and of itself. And of course, teaming her up with Lloyd makes for a very special event for the whole day.
Yeah. And I know that, we started out originally with having one brief retreat per year, in Connecticut. Now we've expanded that to both a winter and a summer retreat, with the summers being in Connecticut and the winters so far being in Florida. And that's always very dear to our hearts because it's a small crowd. There's only 50, a maximum of 50 attendees, and in addition to having three certified mediums, we always have a featured facilitator, and this year in Connecticut, it's going to be Carla Wills Brandon, who is also she's a well-known psychologist, but her specialty is in spirituality and other related phenomena, and she's an expert in what she calls departing visions, which we may call, you know, deathbed visions, and she'll be giving some really interesting talks on that. So it's, you know, I always say the content is great and the readings are great, the information is valuable, but it's being immersed in an environment like that with 40 other people or 50 other people that are more or less in various stages of grief and understand what you may be going through, and that's valuable in and of itself.
I think that one thing that's very important to add here is it's not just a weekend with a facilitator and a bunch of mediums. It's an entire program that we have developed and refined over the years. We started the very first one in 2009. Actually, the very, very first grief symposium, for lack of a better word, that we did was in 2007, and it was an all-day event, and people were clamoring, saying, you've got to make this into a weekend, you've got to make... And so we did in 2009... made it into a weekend, and now it has blossomed and developed into something where every single facilitator and volunteer and staff person working on these events are amazed at the noted change in the attendees from when they arrive on Friday to when they leave on Sunday evening. And we put such wonderful special touches in there. I know when we have the summer one in Connecticut, we're able to go outside and have a Saturday night bonfire with a shaman ceremony, calling in spirit. We also have vibrational sound music through crystal sound bowls and Tibetan sound bowls that also help people get into a meditative state where they can connect with their deceased loved ones. So it's all about this connection and opening yourself up and learning to continue your relationship with your deceased loved ones, as opposed to what traditional therapists want you to do, which is separate and go on with your lives. That's not what we believe in.
And if you weren't busy enough, I know that you're working very hard to get the details up this weekend on our medium convention, which will be in November, and that is going to be, and I don't get excited about a lot of things, but in reading off the slate and the activities, I think this is going to be pretty
exciting. Last night we had a meeting with all of the volunteers, and the volunteers were getting so excited over it. So, you know, and they're going to be working their little butts off during this event. So imagine the people who are going to be attending and getting the benefits of this beautiful program that everybody has worked so hard to put together. So they took our last medium convention, took the feedback from the attendees, and worked with the hotel to come up with this actually fabulous weekend event that takes you through everything. It's not pick and choose. Well, you will be choosing what classes you are interested in that you will want to attend during the weekend, but it you become a whole family with everybody who's there, and everybody is there from Friday night through the dinners, through wine and cheese gatherings, through ice cream bars, and all these wonderful things that bring the whole group of people together.
Well, watch for details on that. It'll be on the website. There are going to be six certified mediums there. There's going to be all sorts of workshops and classes and plenty of spirit communication. So,
and you want to tell everybody to save the date.
Yeah, which is
November. Did I remember what it is?
November 9th through 11th.
9th through 11th, that's 2018. It. And that's a long weekend. That's Veterans Day weekend.
Okay. So we're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to have a very illustrious guest. He's been probably doing more work in this field of parapsychology than any person I know alive today, Dr. Stanley Krippner. So stay with us, and we'll be back after a few minutes with Dr. Krippner.
The Camlack Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the Camlack Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlack.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
We all grieve in different ways, and let's face it, grief hurts. Losing a loved one is usually the hardest event we will ever face. We can throw our hands up and become hardened by our grief, or we can take positive steps to transform it. Love Knows No Death, a groundbreaking and powerful grief transformation method, can be what you've been looking for to provide some peace and understanding. It was created and written by medical doctor and professor Dr. Piero Calvi Perazzetti, and it's a combination of a self-help workbook and video course. The workbook has the power to lessen grief and foster significant healing, and has already helped countless people to not only lead productive lives, but to do so with the knowledge that they will indeed see their loved ones again. The workbook can be purchased for $19.95 on Amazon or on the ForeverFamilyFoundation.org grief and loss page, where a digital version is also available for $9.95. Love knows no death. Truer words have never been spoken.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at ForeverFamilyFoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Just tuning in, our guest this evening is Dr. Stanley Krippner. Our sponsor tonight is the Camlack Center, and they can be found on the web at camlack.com. Bob?
And Dr. Stanley Krippner is a true pioneer in the study of consciousness. He's traveled the globe conducting workshops and seminars on dreams and hypnosis. He's immersed himself in many indigenous cultures. And he's always exploring the nature of our mind. He's world-renowned for his dream research and study of other anomalous phenomena that defy mainstream thinking. He's currently a professor of psychology at Saybrook University. He's past president of the Association for Humanistic Psychology and the International Association for the Study of Dreams. He's the author and co-author of a great many books, including Extraordinary Dreams and How to Work with Them, Personal Mythology, Using Ritual, Dreams, and Imagination to Discover Your Inner Story. And the book we'll be focusing on today, The Shamanic Powers of Rolling Thunder. You can read more about Dr. Krippner on stanleykrippner.weebly.com. And welcome to Signs of Life, Dr. Krippner.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
And I mentioned off air, believe it or not, it's been 10 years since we spoke with you last. So we're so happy to have you back again.
Yes, how time flies.
Yeah. I mentioned, Rolling Thunder. And shamanism, of course, has been around since the ancients. But I've noticed today, I don't know whether it's a trend, but of late there seem to be a great many people that are coming out of the woodwork claiming to be shamans. So are people born shamans, or is it something that can be learned through teaching and guidance?
Well, you have to be very careful with the people who are claiming to be shamans, because to be a shaman, you have to have three things in place, and the first of it all is that they have to have a community. It's the community that gives them the title of shaman, or whatever word is used in their particular culture and language. Secondly, they have to be able to access information from non-ordinary means, through plants, from dreams, from drumming, from whatever. And third, they need to use this information to help them to heal members of their community. Now, unless you have those three things going for you, there is no way that you can be considered a legitimate shaman.
Mm-hmm. So, and you mentioned, one of the things you mentioned is you have to have the community. So, it's rare, it seems, for shamans to talk about their knowledge. Isn't it true that generally that this ancient knowledge is kept within the native community as opposed to sharing it with the outside world?
Yes, it's usually something that is confined to the community, and the community, of course, guards a lot of that information as a treasure, as a heritage, and the shaman is very careful in terms of what he or she might share with the outside world. I've been told things by shamans under the condition that I do not share them with outsiders. And then I've also been given information by shamans that they have said is legitimate and appropriate to share. So this is my experience, and it jibes with what you have just said. Mm. Rolling Thunder, for example, never called himself a shaman. And he considered himself an intertribal medicine man. Now, outsiders called him a shaman because he did have a community. He, for 10 years, had a live-in community called Metatanti, Live in Peace. And people came from all over the country, actually all over the world, to live there and to learn from him. And the community lasted a long time. It only dissolved when his wife died, Spotted Fawn, who was the heart of the community. But then Rolling Thunder still saw people at his home, and people would come to him for help and for healing. And so he had a much looser, much more flexible community who considered him a shaman. So I know we're going to be talking a lot about Rolling Thunder, and I think he would have mixed feelings about that book's title, The Shamanic wisdom of Rolling Thunder, because, like I told you, he thought it would be presumptuous for himself to be called a shaman.
And as you mentioned, the term medicine man, by medicine, we're talking about nature's medicine.
Yes, we're talking about medicine in the indigenous sense of the word, which means not only the herbs and the potions and the brews and the teas that are used to make a person well, but the rituals and the ceremonies and the rites and the dances and the community support, which they consider equally important in terms of helping people. The first time that I went to a healing ceremony with Rolling Thunder, it started out by a sweat lodge, and all of us took off our clothes and went into the sweat lodge for half an hour, and we stayed in the sweat lodge, coming out at interviews to splash cold water on ourselves and then going back in again and doing prayers and singing and chants. And then once we finished that, we did sort of a dance that he called the snake dance around the person who was the patient who had come to him for healing. And then Rolling Thunder started his own ritual, taking an eagle feather and poking it on her body until he found a part where she was in pain. And then he put his mouth to that part of the body and did some what we call cupping and suction and released the pain. And this is a woman who had been to several Western-trained physicians for her pain for a couple of years, but that one session of the Rolling Thunder cleared up the pain for the rest of her life.
And what were your first thoughts when you witnessed things like this for the first time? And were you questioning, or were you just did you think this was just the natural path of the way things were?
Well, of course, I have seen this so often. I've been with over 100 shamans from all over the world, half of them women, by the way. And so I've come to the conclusion, yes, this is the way the world works. And that doesn't mean to say that the placebo effect is not operating, that imagination is not operating, and that charisma is not operating. And a good shaman knows how to take advantage of all of those natural occurring processes.
Mm. You know, you seem, as you mentioned, to be connected to a great many shamans. And Rolling Thunder's grandson said that in the past, shamans from around the world maintained a connection to each other. And this is long before the Internet. So that's pretty interesting in and of itself. But also what struck me is that apparently there were a great many instances when friends or colleagues of yours would travel to remote villages, and when they told the village shaman that they were from the U.S., what did the shaman say? Oh, do you know Stanley Krippner? So how do you, evidently the word about Stanley Krippner spread throughout the world. How do you suppose that happened?
I have no idea. It's quite remarkable because obviously these shamans don't communicate with each other by the Internet or by email, but the same thing can be said in reverse. When I visited Credo Mutwa, the famous Sangoma or shaman in South Africa with the Zulus, and said that I was a friend of Rolling Thunder's, that really opened the door because he knew all about Rolling Thunder. They had never met, but he considered Rolling Thunder a brother and was eager to hear about my experiences with Rolling Thunder. And the same thing goes with other shamans I've visited throughout the world. When I start talking about my experiences, it's very often that I mention a name or they mention a name, and it's a name that they recognize.
Mm.
So there is sort of a network, sort of a invisible network that connects the people who are doing much the same thing but within their own cultural setting.
apparently,
and obviously I'm very flattered when people go to remote parts of the world and they say that they're from the United States and my name comes up. It doesn't come up all the time, of course, but whenever it does come up, it's very gratifying to me, not for purposes of ego, but to know that at least I've reported what shamans do in an accurate way.
Absolutely. So what about the name Rolling Thunder? I mean, obviously that has something to do with his ability to change the weather and produce thunder?
Yes, I mean, that's how he got his name. And the book that you so graciously mentioned, The Shamanic Powers of Rolling Thunder, has a whole section devoted to instances where he reportedly affected the weather. Now, to Rolling Thunder, this was not a case of cause and effect. He didn't claim to cause lightning or thunder or terrain to happen. It was more of a matter of interacting with nature. And when interacting with nature, he and nature became one, and he was able to, shall we say, tilt the balance a little bit. But he did that knowing what the conditions were and what the situation was. In the book, there is a story told by Larry Dossey, who is a very well-known physician, about how Rolling Thunder came to Dallas, Texas, and there was a great deal of hostility from a local journalist, and he went to hear Rolling Thunder speak and wrote sort of a satirical, nasty article about him. And Rolling Thunder phoned him and reached him on the telephone and said, "I want you to watch the weather for the next 24 hours. Well, Rolling Thunder left town, and that evening there was a rainstorm and a thunderstorm, which was not predicted by any of the weather people and which was unusual for that time of year. Did the journalist report that in the newspaper? No, of course not. But I hope he learned a little bit from that."
I'm sure he did. You know, you obviously spent a good part of your career studying the nature of dreams. Did somebody like Rolling Thunder believe that we should pay attention to our dreams? Was that part of his culture?
Oh, yes. Rolling Thunder was very much involved with dreams. In an earlier book that his grandson and I wrote, The Voice of Rolling Thunder, we devote two chapters about Rolling Thunder's perspective on dreams. One of the chapters tells about Rolling Thunder's a dream walker. We have instances where people report that Rolling Thunder actually walked into their dream, made his appearance in their dreams, and either did some healing in the dream or taught them a lesson of some sort. And this is an old Native American tradition, the tradition of the dreamwalker, and it's been reported for ages and for years. And again, from our Western scientific point of view, this is impossible. But in shamanism, it's par for the course. And this is one way that shamans around the world will use dreams to help and to heal people.
Well, I mean, while we're on the subject of dreams, and obviously you're an authority, I mean, what goes on in precognitive dreams? I mean, if I have a dream where I see an event that has not happened yet, and at a later date that event comes true, I mean, the common explanation is that I caught a glimpse of the future. So is that the strongest explanation in your opinion?
I don't think we really have an answer to that. And as long as you've brought up the topic, I'm going to put in a plug for a book by a friend of mine, Julia Moss Bridge. And
yes,
she's just about to publish an entire book on precognitive dreams. Now, people publish these books all the time, but Julia is a very special person. She's an experimental psychologist, and she has studied precognitive dreams, and she has some theoretical material that involves quantum physics, that involves the circularity of time, that involves intuition, this involves a whole host of mechanisms at work that occasionally produce a dream where the future is laid out. Now, some people will say, well, that means that everything is predestined, but it doesn't jibe with the evidence at all, because there is a collection of precognitive dreams that took place over many, many years, and then the follow-up, whenever a dream was sad, tragic, or dangerous, the dreamer is able to change the outcome 80% of the time.
Mm.
So the future is very pliable, very flexible, and we can get an insight onto the future, but that doesn't mean that it's always going to happen the way that we dream about it or envision it.
Mm. Well, that's so a lot of people that believe, you know, believe in fate and that their life is planned out for them, but actually this seems to indicate that, as you mentioned, it's the future is fluid. You know, maybe we have some certain pathways in place, but we don't know which pathway we're going to follow.
You're absolutely right, and I, of course, am sympathetic with all points of view because nobody really knows the bottom line. But when people talk about, oh, that was his fate, that was her fate, I think to myself that's sheer nonsense, because there's such a thing as free will, there's such a thing as pliability of the future, there's flexibility, there's what parapsychologists call retrocausality, and we can get a vague impression of what might be happening. But if for one reason or another we want to make the change, and if we have the intention to make the change, yes, we can sometimes make the change and avoid the disaster. I think that's one of the functions of precognitive dreams, to warn us that something might happen so that we can take steps to mitigate it and to keep it from happening.
Mm.
And I've had many experiences like that during my life. Some years ago, I was in Peru, and a shaman in Peru asked each of us to send in advance our birth dates, which we did. And then when we arrived, he had a fortune for each of us on a piece of paper. And most of the fortunes were very good, but mine said two words: disaster, disgrace.
Oh, my.
So he took me and the other people who had negative predictions off into the mountains, and we did a smoking ceremony with some herbs to sort of mitigate the effects. And a few days later, I was on an airplane, and somebody said to me, "Stan, you are in the news." And sure enough, the Chicago Tribune had an article about me. Absolutely incorrect. They'd got my name mixed up with somebody else's, and I got back to the United States, and I got all sorts of negative letters, and I had to explain, oh, that wasn't me, that was somebody else. And the Chicago Tribune had made a mistake. Eventually, they did a retraction, but it was on page 23 of the newspaper, and to this day, there are some people who believe that I actually said or did such things, and so the shaman in Peru is absolutely correct.
Mm.
And like I say, he did what he could to soften the blow, and once I told people the truth, it was fine, but it gave me a good story because I've used that story in material that I've written. And so it did serve a very unusual purpose, because there's the article in black and white. You can't doubt the article, and the article was a mistake. It was an error. You cannot doubt that. And several people witnessed me unwrapping the fortune, so I have an eyewitness for that. So if nothing else, it made for a good story.
Absolutely. And like you say, it's interesting that it softened the blow, because had you not gotten that fortune, you may have reacted quite differently. I mean, you sort of expected it when it happened, right?
Yes, the fortune got me prepared for something, And if I hadn't, and then of course being on the airplane and somebody by chance reading the paper was a blessing. Otherwise, I would have taken days to find out about it. I would not have been prepared for it. And so the dream really served a useful purpose. But I can tell you many stories where the outcome was much more serious. And there's a very well-documented case of a rather humble and poor family living together in a small house that they had rented. And the woman had a dream that a chandelier had fallen off the ceiling and hit her baby's crib, killing the baby at 2 o'clock in the morning. And so she immediately went to the crib and took the baby into bed with her and her husband. And the husband was saying, oh, you're just anxious. That was just a dream. Well, they all went to sleep. At exactly 2 o'clock in the morning, there's a crash. The chandelier had broken loose from the ceiling, had fallen right on the baby's crib.
Well, there's a valuable lesson there that it's a mistake to summarily dismiss our dreams. We need to pay attention to them.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. We are talking with Dr. Stanley Krippner. One of the books we're talking about is The Shamanic Powers of Rolling Thunder. And a fascinating account of Rolling Thunder. And you can find a lot more information on Stan's website. It's Stanley Krippner, KRIPPNER.Weebly.com. There's more to come. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll have more to talk with Dr. Krippner. Stay with us.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's KAMLAK.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
Am I Psychic is a mobile app designed using statistics, science, and parapsychological protocols to test psychic ability using fun games. Each game has two unique modes. In psychokinesis mode, influence the game using mind over matter ability. In extrasensory perception mode, guess which random option will be chosen. Am I Psychic can store your results in an anonymous database used to eventually publish in academic journals. Available on the App Store and Google Play. Go to ampsychicapp.com and be a part of proving psychic phenomena to the world. Some profits will be donated to the Rhine Research Center.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
We all grieve in different ways, and let's face it, grief hurts. Losing a loved one is usually the hardest event we will ever face. We can throw our hands up and become hardened by our grief, or we can take positive steps to transform it. Love Knows No Death, a groundbreaking and powerful grief transformation method, can be what you've been looking for to provide some peace and understanding. It was created and written by medical doctor and professor Dr. Piero Calvi Perazzetti, and it's a combination of a self-help workbook and video course. The workbook has the power to lessen grief and foster significant healing, and has already helped countless people to not only lead productive lives, but to do so with the knowledge that they will indeed see their loved ones again. The workbook can be purchased for $19.95 on Amazon or on the foreverfamilyfoundation.org grief and loss page, where a digital version is also available for $9.95. Love knows no death. Truer words have never been spoken.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, we have been talking to Dr. Stanley Krippner. Our sponsor is the Comlock Center, and they can be found on the web at comlock.com. To remind our listeners, if you want to check in on our events, check in regularly on our website at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. And to let everyone know about our free events coming up in April, we have on April 8th from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, our Afterlife Discussion Group meets in Sanibel, Florida. On April 14th from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern and 11 to noon Pacific, our Visionary Explorers Group meets online. And also on April 14th from 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern, our Afterlife Discussion Group meets in Miami, Florida. Our Holiday of the Earth Raffle 2018 drawing is next month. You can win up to 5 medium readings with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums Amy Utzman, Angelina Diana, Dustin Livers, Rebecca Ann Lo Cicero, and Dave Campbell. The drawing is set for Earth Day, April 22nd. Winners are selected randomly by a computer program from consecutive numbers assigned at entry. It is only $5 to enter. The early bird rates for Afterlife Luncheon, May 6th, that we spoke about earlier in the show, they end on March 31st. So you want to reserve those seats now for a full five-hour day with two very special people who have all the answers about the afterlife, Lloyd Auerbach and Kim Russo. Our next webinar is set for April 25th at 9 p.m. Eastern, and you don't want to miss this one. Itzhak Beery presents Shamanic Cosmology and Visioning. The webinars are $6 for members and $20 for non-members. And if you are considering attending our next summer grief retreat in Chester, Connecticut, you do not want to wait. There are only 50 spots. Half are filled, and the super early bird rates end on April 1st, so you want to hurry and make your reservations. Also, watch your email boxes for a special weekend in Fort Myers, Florida, this coming November 9th through 11th. When our social network feature, Mediums Behind the Scenes, goes live. And please, please, please help us keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It's on every single page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that all other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. You can also help us pay our bills by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, Amazon Smile, and great nonprofits. Back to you, Bob.
And we're back with Dr. Stanley Krippner. We're talking about the shamanic powers of rolling thunder. Dr. Krippner, I mean, how important was it to rolling thunder and other shamans to communicate with deceased ancestors? Was that part of the ceremonies and the ritual?
To communicate with who?
Deceased ancestors.
Oh, good heavens. Yeah. It depends upon the tribe, actually. Many of the tribes will actually call in the spirits of the ancestors to help with the healing. Other tribes say, look, the ancestors are busy doing their own thing, so we don't want to call them back to Earth. They're preoccupied preparing for their next life or working on their spiritual evolution or networking with people in the other world. So calling upon the ancestors really depends upon the particular tribe that you're talking about.
Mm. Well, that's interesting, because some people question why their loved ones don't come through in medium readings, and one explanation that's sometimes given is maybe their relatives in spirit are doing other things.
Absolutely. Yeah. They have better things to do than to come and visit their loved ones in this life. They'll be seeing their relatives in this life soon enough if they pass on to the other side.
Yeah.
So people shouldn't feel slighted. They shouldn't feel ignored. They just have to realize that they can't make judgments about the other world based on what they do in this world.
That's so true. I mean, you wrote in the book that Rolling Thunder often referred to ceremonies versus ritual. So, I mean, what's the difference between a ceremony and a ritual?
Well, different people have different opinions on that, but I see a ritual as a very, very specific set of activities designed to achieve a particular purpose. A ceremony consists of several rituals, and in a ceremony you might have half a dozen rituals. Take, for example, a coronation ceremony when a king or a queen is crowned. There are half a dozen rituals that take place within that particular ceremony. And so a ritual is much more specific, and also it's much more focused. A ceremony consists of several rituals, but it's less specific, and it often honors a specific event, or it marks a transition from one leader to another leader, either in a clan or in a nation. So depending on what anthropology book you read, you will be giving several different definitions, and I've just told you mine.
Mm. What about power animals, which I know Rolling Thunder had certain power animals, and I've read that in reading about other, you know, shamans. So what is a power animal? How does a shaman use them?
Well, this is one interesting thing that's sort of common in shamans around the world. Almost always they claim to get help from nature, from a favorite of theirs, often the animal or bird or even fish or amphibian, that appeared to them in their dreams and helped initiate them or call them into the world of shamanism. And they will use that power animal in their healing. Rolling Thunder had a power bird, the eagle, which he identified with very closely, and he even felt that he could shapeshift himself into an eagle from time to time. And whether in actuality or in his imagination, he would fly around the landscape, sizing things up, even coming to heal people at a distance. Well, he had eagle feathers, which for him were very, very sacred, and he would use eagle feathers in his healing, like the story I told you, where he used an eagle feather to punch and to poke part of a woman's body, and when she winced in pain, he knew that he had hit a sensitive spot that needed some work, and he used that sort of as the portal to extract the illness and to replace the bad with the good.
Mm.
Now, I was in Panama, and I was with a number of Kuna Indians from the San Blas Islands, and many Indians have come to Panama City to find work, and the shamans invited me to a weekly ritual in which members of the tribe don't forget their roots. They actually dance to drumming as their power animal. And if you look at them, you can prickly size up who their power animal is. If they're flapping their arms, you know it's a bird. If they're on their stomach, you know that it's a snake or a turtle. If they're hulking over, you know it's a four-footed animal. And it was quite delightful and charming and also very, very meaningful to listen to the drumming. And this was at twilight, by the way, so I couldn't take very clear pictures, even though I had permission to do so, to see all the power animals interact with each other. And then this gave people some vigor and vim and energy for the coming week.
So when you're, you've witnessed so many of these, you know, ceremonies and which rituals, does anything surprise you anymore?
I think I'm past the point of being surprised, but all I can say is I have not lost my sense of wonder, because to see a sick person undergoing a transformation that makes him or her feel better, and sometimes healed completely, yes, that leaves me with a sense of wonderment, even though people like Rolling Thunder would say, well, it's not me that's doing the healing, it's the Great Spirit that's doing the healing, and it's also the person's expectation, the person's inner shaman that's doing the healing. And shamans have explanations, Western observers and scientists have explanations, but that still doesn't take away the sense of wonder that I have witnessed. And then, of course, the healing is not always successful. Rolling Thunder could not heal his wife when she had cancer. The best I could do is to come to the hospital and use hypnosis to decrease the pain. And Rolling Thunder paid me a very great compliment because he had spent a lot of money bringing Native American healers from all over the country, and he said that I'd done more work for her that helped out than any of the expensive shamans and medicine people that he had brought. And, of course, I wouldn't think of charging, but she was always happy to see me, and my work with her, apparently, I taught her also self-hypnosis, helped the pain and eased her transition into the next life.
Well, you know, Stan, you may not be a shaman, but in your own right, you're a healer. So who's to say which is more important? You know, so as you mentioned, you did a wonderful thing for her at the end, and I'm sure that she still appreciates that. And one of the best things I've heard you say is that happiness is living in the moment. So I think that you make the point that we make a mistake by becoming too attached to the past or worrying about the future. And I'm sorry, but we've come to the end of our time. I wish I could talk to you a lot more. I so appreciate you joining us, and I wanted to tell everybody, again, mention this book, The Shamanic Powers of Rolling Thunder, when you start looking up Stanley Krippner, you're going to see a great many books, including Extraordinary Dreams and How to Work with Them, and look them up on stanleykrippner.weebly.com. Stan, thanks so much for joining us this evening. Be well, and I hope to speak with you again soon.
Thank you so much. And like you say, people should live in the moment because that's really all we have.
Thank you. Take care.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Kat Barad, Robin Murray, Ashley Jackson, Matt Mello, and Fred Folger. Now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.